Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 3. Rishabhadeva's appearance. And today we have text number 14. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's a prose verse. Kovahi hate parajito parajitaya mayaya navasita padavyana vrta matir Vishaya Visharayana Vrita Prakriti Ranupashita Mahacharana. Translation. Dear Lord, unless one worships the lotus feet of great devotees, one will be conquered by the illusory energy, and his intelligence will be bewildered. Indeed, who has not been carried away by the waves of material enjoyment, which are like poison? Your illusory energy is unconquerable. No one can see the path of this material energy or tell how it is working. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Nabhi was inclined to performing great sacrifices for begetting a son. The son might be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but such a material desire, be it great or insignificant, is brought about by the influence of Maya. A devotee does not at all desire anything for sense gratification. Devotion is therefore explained as devoid of material desires, anyabhilashita, shunya. Everyone is subjected to the influence of Maya and entangled in all kinds of material desire. And Maharaj Nabhi was no exception. Freedom from Maya's influence is possible when one engages in the service of the great devotees, Mahacharana Seva. Without worshipping the lotus feet of a great devotee, one cannot be freed from Maya's influence. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore says, Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Payeche Keba. Who has been freed from Maya's clutches without serving the lotus feet of a Vaishnava? Maya is aparajita, and their influence is also aparajita. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14, Daivihi Esha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya. Quote, this divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. Unquote. Only a devotee can surpass Maya's great influence. It was no fault on Maharaj Nabhi's part that he wanted a son. He wanted a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the best of all sons. By the association of the Lord's devotee, one no longer desires material opulence, This is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22:54. Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastre Koi, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sanghe, Sarva Siddhi Hoy. And Madhya 22:51. Mahakripa Vina Kona Karme Bhakti Noi, Krishna Bhakti Dure Rahu Samsara Nahi Kshoy. If one is serious about escaping Maya's influence and returning home, back to God, one must associate with a sadhu, devotee. That is the verdict of all scriptures. By the slight association of a devotee, one can be freed from the clutches of Maya. Without the mercy of the pure devotee, one cannot get freedom by any means. Certainly, a pure devotee's association is necessary in order to obtain the loving service of the Lord. One cannot be free from Maya's clutches without Sadhu Sangha, the benediction of a great devotee. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.32, Prahlad Maharaj says, Naishamati stavat uru kramangrin sprishatya narta pagamoya dharta mahiya sampada raju bhishekam niskinchanan navranita yavat. One cannot become the Lord's pure devotee without taking the dust of a great devotee on his head. Padarajo bishekam. A pure devotee is niskinchana. He has no material desire to enjoy the material world. One has to take shelter of such a pure devotee in order to attain his qualities. The pure devotee is always free from the clutches of Maya and her influence. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Shakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Namo. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prasadne Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Disha Tarine Vansha Kalpa Rupasya Kripa Sindhu Vashavampya Vaishnabhyo Namo. Translation again, these are the Brahmanas who are praying to the Lord. If you like to repeat, Dear Lord, unless one worships the lotus feet of great devotees, one will be conquered by the illusory energy. And his intelligence will be bewildered. Indeed, who has not been carried away by the waves of material enjoyment, which are like poison? Your illusory energy is unconquerable. No one can see the path of this material energy or tell how it is working. Srila Prabhupada here very strongly, repeatedly stresses the importance, in fact the necessity, of associating with the pure devotee. Taking shelter in a pure devotee. So the question is, once we have set the principle that we need a pure devotee in our life, we need to be connected with a pure devotee or more pure devotees in our life, the question is how to recognize the pure devotee. One difficulty is that the pure devotee generally never advertises himself as a pure devotee. If you are looking for an engineer or a doctor, it's a bit easier because there are some standards, even legal standards. When an engineer to build a bridge or something, they have some documentation that they are engineers. A doctor, you go to the chamber of a doctor, outside there is the title of a doctor, doctor so-and-so. By pure devotee, doesn't advertise himself. You don't go to a house of a devotee, it's written, so-and-so does pure devotee. And if you ask, even sincerely, Prabhu, are you a pure devotee? He will say something like, no, I'm only a worm in the stool of a worm, in the stool of a worm. So it's like that makes it a compounded difficulty to find the pure devotee. So then we have to decide. We have to decide for ourselves. We have to have some clear understanding because we need pure devotees in our life. We need to take shelter and eventually initiation for pure devotees. So we need to recognize them. And frankly speaking, my observation is that there is a lot of confusion about the definition of pure devotee, a pure devotion. I'm talking about in ISKCON, besides outside. In ISKCON, I noticed that often there is this confusion, especially confusion between pure devotion and pure love of Krishna. I noticed, I don't know about yourselves here in this room or those who are following us through the internet or on the radio, I don't know about yourself, but I noticed other devotees who basically assume that Uttama Bhakti is the same as Krishna Prema, which is not. Krishna Prema includes Uttama Bhakti, but Uttama Bhakti does not necessarily include Krishna Prema. And that apparently small confusion, which is maybe a linguistic confusion or just a dictionary confusion, may make a lot of difference practically, psychologically, socially. Because if we think that Uttama Bhakti is the same as Krishna Prema, which is not, then we are thinking that only those in Krishna Prema are pure devotees, which is not. I'll give you an example. In December 1972, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to a disciple. His name was Tushta Krishna. He was a leader in New Zealand. And he was... Some of you know about this, the history of Siddha Swarupananda. Siddha Swarup was a person, was a yogi who had a lot of followers. And he joined the Hare Krishna movement, took initiation from Srila Prabhupada. And at the same time, he had his own mood. And his followers tended a lot to still keep to themselves. They had a little bit their own theory, how to preach, and this and that. So this Tushta Krishna Prabhu was part of this kind of group. And Srila Prabhupada says, among other things, you speak of pure devotee that is Shaktyavesha Avatara, that we should obey him only. These things are the wrong idea. If anyone thinks like that a pure devotee should be obeyed and no one else, that means he is a nonsense. We advise everyone to address one another as Prabhu. Prabhu means master. So how the master should be disobeyed? In other words, if you talk Prabhu, 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 you need also to listen to the Prabhu. Otherwise, it's just a formality. Others, they are also pure devotees. All my disciples are pure devotees. All my disciples are pure devotees. Anyone sincerely serving the spiritual master is a pure devotee. It may be Siddha Swarupa or others, Asiddha Swarupa. This must be very clearly stated. It is not only that your Siddha Swarupa is a pure devotee and not others. As soon as we distinguish, here is a pure devotee, here is a non-pure devotee, that means I am nonsense. It's kind of heavy. I mean, as soon as you distinguish, he's a pure devotee, he's not a pure devotee, he's a nonsense. I'm nonsense. Why you only want to be in the spiritual sky with Siddha Swarupa? Why not all? If Siddha Swarupa can go, why not everyone? Siddha Swarupa will go, you will go, Shama Sundar will go, all others will go. We will have another ISKCON there. Of course, Mr. Nair must stay. Mr. Nair is, of course, the gentleman, euphemistically, the gentleman who in Mumbai sold the land, Juhu land, to Srila Prabhupada, and then he tried to cheat back. So everybody will go to the spiritual world, but Mr. Nair will stay in the material world. So all my disciples are pure devotees. And then after a couple of weeks, Srila Prabhupada writes to the Madhudvisa Prabhu, who was the GBC for this area, New Zealand, Australia. And he tells him, recently, I had sent one letter to reply to Tushta Krishna's questions about Siddha Swarupa. Namely, the Siddha Swarupa may be pure devotee, but so all of you are also pure devotees. There is no question that Siddha Swarupa is only pure devotee and no one else is pure devotee. All of my disciples, as soon as they surrender themselves to Krishna, they become pure devotees actually. So you have this type of different type of expressions. One who may seems to be kind of liberal or broad. All my disciples, Prabhupada says, he wrote, all my disciples are pure devotees. And then you have sentences like that. We might a little bit doubt that, because it says the pure devotees is always free from the clutches of Maya and her influence. So we might imagine a bit of a very, very high. So one explanation I heard, which makes a lot of sense to me, so why all devotees, and of course not just Srila Prabhupada disciples, but everybody is in the disciplic succession of Srila Prabhupada, who is serious devotee, disciple. Why everybody is a pure devotee? One interesting explanation is that if Krishna, would appear in front of you, any of you, and ask you, what do you want? You will all ask for, I don't know what you'll ask, but generally the devotee will ask for Krishna prema, pure love of Krishna, or eternal service, or the satisfaction of the spiritual master, pure devotional service, something in that area. Am I right? I don't think any of you, if Krishna appears in front of you and says, what do you want? What would you like me? What blessing do you want? It's not that you pull out some sort of notebook and say, okay, I would like to be born as Indra, and then maybe also Varuna, next Brahma, and then I would like, you know, a very big house and a lot of money. I don't think any of you will do that. But any devotee, ISKCON devotee in good standing, will do that. So the basic desire is to please the Lord, is to reach Krishna prema, pure love of Krishna. That's the fundamental desire. There may be some interferences. There may be some interferences because of our previous samskaras, previous impressions, experiences in previous lives, and this life. And therefore this vasana, these desires may appear in the screen of our mind. But if we do not follow those desires, if we do not cultivate those desires, we can be still in the realm of pure devotional service. It's not because sometimes something weird crosses your mind, you're not a pure devotee anymore. Just like first verse of Upadeshamrit, nectar of instruction. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaro pasta vegam. Etam vegam yovisha heta dhira, sarvam apimam prithivim sashishyat. What that verse says, Srila Rupa Goswami says, I'm sure you're all familiar with that verse, one who can control these six urges, prithivim sashishyat, he can make disciples all over the world. In other words, he or she is qualified to accept shelter, give shelter to others. Give shelter, which is what Srila Prabhupada says, one should take shelter in a pure devotee. And it does not say, please notice, does not say if one is free from those urges. It says one can control those urges. In other words, in the body of a pure devotee, those urges may be still there. Vacho vegam, the tendency to say something not directly connected with Krishna, not really beneficial. Vacho vegam, manasa, krodha vegam, the urges of the mind and anger. Jiva vegam, the urge of tasting something good. Udaro pasta vegam, the urge of the stomach and genitals. Etam vegam yo vishaheta. Vishaheta, if he can tolerate. Doesn't say he has to be free in the sense that these things don't appear anymore. But if he can control, in other words, if he can follow the regulatory principles, follow the path of bhakti yoga seriously, with integrity, he can make disciples all over the world. So this is very important to understand, because bhakti yoga, it's a social lifestyle. There's a lot of association, there's a lot of interaction. And in our social understanding, we need to understand whom we are dealing with. And pure devotee is a central issue in this. And therefore Srila Prabhupada in this purport quotes the verse Anyabhilashita Shunyam, which is the definition of Uttama Bhakti. All our movement is based on Srila Rupa Goswami's teaching, especially the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So in that book, at the very beginning, 11th verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami describes what is pure devotion. And he says, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukulena Krishna Nushilanam Bhakti Ruttama. Okay, so first of all, the Acharyas, there are elaborate commentaries by Srila Jiva Goswami, by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And by the way, this is available in the translation by His Holiness Bhanu Maharaj. You might have seen that book in two volumes, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It gives the translation of the original book with the Sanskrit, and then it gives also the translation of Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries. So they give very elaborate commentaries. And they get into the verbs, the meaning of the verbs, the dhatu, and so on. I'm not getting too much into the details here. But about the word Anya Abhilashita Shunyam, they explain that there is a difference between Abhilasha and Abhilashita. I may not be able to explain exactly how does it work in Sanskrit, but basically the difference is that there is a difference between just a desire, like a fleeting idea, something that crosses the mind, something that comes up from our subconscious. We don't expect that, some weird dream, or we see something, we feel attracted. There's a difference between that kind of circumstantial desire and the deep desire of the self, the deep direction that one wants to give to one's life. For instance, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a practical example. A devotee may be in an emergency, a danger of his life. Say there is an accident, or there is maybe some danger of drowning. There is a sudden appearance of a mortal danger. So the devotee may just say, "Oh Krishna, save me, save me." And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say, that's not a desire to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. That's a desire for self-conservation, for survival. But that's not against the principles of pure devotional service, because it's something that appears, and instinctively you want to self-conserve yourselves, you want to survive, say, Krishna, please protect me. Like that. So it's not done as an offer of bhakti, but it's not against bhakti. And it's also very interesting because Anya Bilashita Shunyam, there should not be cultivation of any other desire than to please Krishna and the Guru and so on. They explain also, Krishna means anything connected with Krishna. Means the Guru, the Dham, ISKCON, like that. And the second line says, Anya Bilashita Sunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. It's different, because the first one should be Shunya, zero. We should not cultivate other desire. But the second, Jnana Karma Adi, Jnana Karma, etc., which includes Varnashram and normal duties, Anavritam. Devotion should not be covered by these things. Like for instance, somebody has a job. He's a grihastha. He has to produce some economy to run his family, to feed his family, educate his children. The fact that he some time every day he spends in making, say, money at a job or in business or in some other form, that's not contrary to the principles of devotional service or pure devotional service. If that doesn't cover pure devotion service. Of course, if he works from morning to night, he doesn't have time to chant his rounds, to associate with devotees, that covers devotional service. But if somebody can maintain his vow, can maintain his sadhana, and then, you know, spend some time for the necessary things, that is not against the pure devotee, against the principle of pure devotion. There is an interesting passage, just to understand this concept that Uttama Bhakti is not the same as Prema Bhakti. After six verses, in 1.1.17, Srila Rupa Goswami gives this Sanskrit verse, and many of you know, Kleshagni Shubadha Moksha Laguta Krit Sudurlaba Sandrananda Visheshatma Shri Krishna Akarshani Sayat. Chasa. These are the characteristics of Uttama Bhakti. But two characteristics of this are also present in Sadhana Bhakti. The second two are specifically for Bhava Bhakti, and the next two, the last two, they are specific for Krishna Prema. There is a passage in Nectar of Devotion that sometimes is not so clear. It's on the first chapter. Srila Prabhupada says, in the category of devotional service in practice, means sadhana bhakti, there are two different qualities. Devotional service in ecstasy has four qualities, and devotional service in pure love of God has six qualities. So sometimes it's not clear, what does it mean? Because Srila Prabhupada doesn't list them immediately. So he's referring to this verse, the first two qualities of Uttama Bhakti, which are present at the level of Sadhana Bhakti, are Kleshagni and Shubhada. Kleshagni means that Uttama Bhakti has the power, even at the level of sadhana, has the power to eradicate all suffering, especially all karma. And Shubhadha, it brings all auspiciousness. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada gives a very practical example of auspiciousness. He says, in Nectar of Devotion, this is the second chapter. For example, a Krishna conscious boy, even if he is not very well educated by the university standard, can immediately give up all illicit sex life, gambling, meat eating, and intoxication. And then he goes on. These are practical proofs of how a Krishna conscious person becomes highly developed in good qualities. We experience that even a young boy in Krishna consciousness is unattached to cinemas, nightclubs, naked dance shows, restaurants, liquor shops. He becomes completely freed. So in other words, you can see how Srila Prabhupada practically takes the Shubhada and he applies to his experience, bringing people, you know, from the West, from darkness to light, and making them very auspicious. So when the verse says moksha laguta krit em sudurlaba, which means pure devotional service, automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. No. The even derive the conceptual liberation and pure devotional service is rarely achieved, sudurlabha, that refers to bhava bhakti. Because we see, even many people practice sadhana bhakti, not everyone is at the level of bhava bhakti. So that's the type of uttama bhakti that is very rare. And then the last two, that Sandrananda Visheshatma Shri Krishna Akarshini Chasa means that there is a very, very intense happiness. And devotional service in Krishna Prema even attracts Krishna himself. But that doesn't apply to sadhana bhakti. So of these six characteristics of pure devotion, two are also present in sadhana bhakti. So one can be a pure devotee and still be a sadhana bhakta. And that's an understanding of what Srila Prabhupada say, when all my disciples are pure devotees. They may not be Krishna Prema Bhaktas, but they are pure devotees if they're following. Okay, so this is some ideas on this verse. Any questions, comments? Gyanagami Prabhu? Do we have a mic?
Thank you very much for a wonderful class. It's full of information. I don't know what kind of question to ask exactly, but perhaps you can explain in our personal dealings how we should interact with each other if each of us is a pure devotee.
Okay. Well, I tell you a little story. There was a little monastery, very remote monastery in some mountains in Europe, Christian monasteries. And there were only four monks, old monks. They were very nice monks, but they were very sad because nobody would really come to the monastery. That beautiful altar, beautiful icons, beautiful, but nobody will come. So they really felt bad. So they went to some very wise bishop, and they submitted their plea. Look, we are old. Nobody's coming to our monastery, although it's a very powerful pilgrimage place. We don't know what to do. So this bishop, all he said, is looking very intensely at them. One of you is the pure devotee. That's all he said. So the beginning, they didn't understand. Okay. So they went back to their normal life, to the normal duties. Cooking, cleaning, praying. And they were starting thinking, who could be the pure devotee among us four? Because they really trusted this bishop. He said like that, he's a mystic, he must know the truth. So they were thinking, I'm not. But maybe that he could be, because, you know, he's very, you know, very serious. And maybe the other one, he could be, he's always joyful, you know, maybe he has got this pure devotion. And then maybe the other one. So each of them, they were thinking like that. It's not me, but the other three, like that. So they started acting on that basis. They started acting as if any of those other three could be the pure devotee, could be the saint. And so they started treating themselves with great respect. Because you may be dealing with a pure devotee, with a saint. Who knows? Maybe in 100 years you will be a saint, venerated all over the world, with churches in his name. You don't know. So they started offering service to each other, trying to really be nice, very friendly, at the same time respectful, trying to please each other. At one point, one of those rare guests came to the monastery, and he was impressed by this mood, that everybody was so harmoniously engaged. He really felt this atmosphere of respect, of love, of affection. So he was really impressed. So then he went, he told his friends, say, you know, that monastery is really special. There is this atmosphere. You can really feel it, that devotion they have for each other, for God. And then more people started coming, no? And then more people started saying, look, in this monastery, it's so wonderful that people treat, that these monks treat themselves so nicely, and more people started coming, more people. So the whole region, the whole country became so famous that everybody wanted to go. They organized, you know, tours, retreats, full, you know, bus loads of people just to go and visit. And it became a very, very, very busy monastery. Everybody would go there to see this. So, to answer your question more directly, I would say that at least we should give people the benefit of the doubt. Because actually, a devotee we interact with may have some very deep determination to serve the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada says, as soon as one surrenders to Krishna, as one has sincerely served the spiritual master, he's a pure devotee. May not be very academic, may not be very famous, may not be very high in the hierarchy of the institution, but it may be a pure devotee. It's some very deep determination. In fact, I would say that in Mayapur, it's even more likely that people come from all over the world, why they should leave whatever they're doing to come to Mayapur. Most probably a lot of people are pure devotees in Mayapur. Otherwise, why they should come? They have the desire to be in Mahaprabhu's dham and to serve in Mahaprabhu's dham. That's their primary desire, apparently, demonstrably. So, we never know whom we are dealing with. So we need to go beyond. Oh, he's from South America. Oh, he's from Bengal. He's from here, he's from there. That's okay. But they may actually be pure devotees. Okay? Yeah?
There you go. Did the Christians build a guest house?
Pardon?
Did the monastery, did they build a guest house?
I can't get that. What is that?
So, did they build a guest house?
If pure devotees build guest houses...
No, did they when at the monastery, did they build a guest house?
Probably. I don't know. I didn't get to that part of the story, but...
Anyway, thank you very much. It's a very nice story.
So, there are so many hands. I think there was Prabhu there first, then there was a lady. What time we have to finish here? 8:45 official, so we have 5 minutes, I don't know.
Hare Krishna.
Can go on a little bit more. 8:50.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the opportunity. So Prabhu, according to your explanation, one can be a pure devotee, and at some point one can stop being a pure devotee. So this situation is not permanent or cannot be permanent. And the second part is, why does this happen or can happen?
Okay, yes, the answer is yes. One can be a pure devotee. As I explained, one can be a pure devotee on the level of sadhana bhakti. You may be practicing uttama bhakti on the level of sadhana bhakti. Means you have not yet the spontaneous ecstasy, but you're practicing uttama bhakti. You're controlling the senses, you're doing everything. So, but why this happened that you may fall down? Because there is always free will. The fact that you made a choice, like you, I mean not you, you personally, but you, hypothetically you made a choice, I want to go and live in Mayapur. So that's a pure choice. Probably, it's a very pure choice. I want to live in Mayapur, I want to stay in the dham, I want my children to be in the dham. So that's pure. Then, of course, if you sit in Mayapur and you watch over the internet some movies with nothing to do with pure devotion, that Now, that time you spend watching some movie which has nothing to do with pure devotion, that's not pure devotional service. So you might have been pure in your decision, but then you get a little bit diverted, distracted. So, pure devotee, again, that's why it's important to understand, pure devotion is something you practice. It's not a status you reach and then it's finished. It's something you practice. You practice until bhava, until prema. Then we say from prema, you don't fall down. The example of the Bhagavatam, we are in the fifth canto. Maharaj Bharat. We just finish or is after? It's after, comes after. So Maharaj Bharat, very clearly the Bhagavatam say that he's a Mahabhagavata, which simply means a great devotee. And he is the son of Rishabhadev Maharaj, the first son. And he was a great king and everything. But he had this little distraction with this deer, no? So when he was thinking of the deer, that was not pure devotion. But he was a great devotee. We all had some problem. So a pure devotee, yes, a pure devotee can have problems, certainly. He can choose to be a little bit inattentive. Although he's practicing pure devotion, doing everything, if he's a little bit disattentive, distracted, he can have problems. Mataji, you want to get the mic this way?
I thank you for giving us one test to know whether we are pure devotee or not, because like you said, everybody is pure devotee. But you said
I didn't exactly say that everyone is pure devotee. Well, I said Srila Prabhupada said all my disciples are pure devotees. Yes.
More or less. But you gave like two qualities in sadhana bhakti. One is
Kleshagni,
yes,
and Subhadha.
So if I ask myself, am I like free from the suffering of the three, like Adibhotika, Adi Devika, Adi At, Adi Atmika. So this is a wonderful test, because I know that I'm suffering from the heat and from the barking of the dogs, you know, and the children screaming at night, you know. So thank you very much, Prabhu, for putting me back to
But that's, frankly speaking, that's not the right understanding. It does not say, I mean, I didn't say, and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu doesn't say that the pure devotee on the level of sadhana bhakti is completely beyond the body. He won't feel the heat, he won't feel anything. That's not what I said. It's not what Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu said. He said klesha agni means you burn the old karma, which is the source of the pain. Doesn't mean until you have a body, this body is a target of so many type of pain. Once Srila Prabhupada was in Puerto Vallarta in Mexico, and it was an evening, he was giving a darshan with the devotees. And the devotees, somehow, they were getting bitten by mosquitoes, no? Somehow, Srila Prabhupada wasn't getting bitten, no? So he asked, oh, there are mosquitoes here, not getting bitten. And the devotees said, because you are a pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. And then Srila Prabhupada said, I don't know, in India, they don't make these differences, mosquitoes. So a pure devotee, even a Krishna Prema Bhakta, if a mosquito bites him, it will affect. So please, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. But I thank you to bring it up, because this brings, again, the point that we have a very mythological understanding of what's a pure devotion. And because we have this pure, very idealistic, but kind of fantastic or mythological idea of pure devotion, then we cannot recognize pure devotion. Because somebody says, oh, so hot today. Oh, he cannot be a pure devotee. Sorry if I make it a little fun, but it's very important. That's not what I said. That's not what it says. If you read Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it explains very scientifically how there is prarabdha karma, aprarabdha karma, okay? And the devotional service at the level of sadhana destroys everything. And Srila Rupa Goswami, for instance, says, how you can say, prarabdha karma destroyed. Prarabdha karma means already fructified. He says, he quotes a verse that says, even a dog eater, if he chants the holy name, if he takes up a Krishna bhakti, he becomes purified and he can perform sacrifices. So that means that the avidya, the ignorance, which is the root cause of suffering, of sin, and then of suffering, gets removed, even this level of sadhana bhakti. It does not mean that a pure devotee doesn't feel hot, doesn't feel cold. That's not anywhere, really. Tell me, where in Srila Rupa Goswami book says that? Or where in Srila Prabhupada book says that? That's why I'm saying, and I leave you with this message, let's be very careful. I could give you so many more examples of how, because we think Uttama Bhakti is same as Prema Bhakti, and sometimes we imagine that the devotees in pure devotion and in Prema Bhakti, they are somewhat totally aloof from the body, they don't know if it's day or night, or then we become very confused. So thank you for bringing it up. Sorry if I'm making a little fun, but it's not, that's not what I said, that is not what the Acharya says. So I think I need to officially close the lecture, but we can stay more. So if you had to go, please feel free to go, and then we'll talk a little more, 5-10 minutes, if you really want to discuss. So Grantara, Shiva Bhadan ki, Shira Prabhupada ki, pure devotion ki.
May I ask a question?
Yes, the verse, yes.
Today's verse, is it speaking about Premi Bhakta, that one needs the dust from the lotus feet of Premi Bhakta to become oneself Premi Bhakta?
That's not my understanding. For instance, when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Madhurya Kadambini, he answers the question, he poses the question, where this bhakti comes from? Because it doesn't come from karma. So he says that bhakti comes from the mercy of a Madhyam Bhakta, from a devotee who is preaching. So it's not that only through the Krishna Prema Bhakta you can get mercy or you can get to bhakti. No, it's not like that. Of course, but more powerful, even among pure devotees, there are people who are much more powerful and much more pure. You follow? We understand that. We understand. So it's not, because we are not, it's not impersonal. Pure devotee, okay, but then there are different levels, just like precious metals. There are several types of precious metals. Silver is a precious metal. Gold is a precious metal. Platinum is even more worth than gold. But you cannot say, oh, gold is useless because platinum is more. So we cannot say, oh, this is a pure devotee, but it may not be total prema box, oh, it's useless. No, it's a still pure devotee, it's still... Just like I give you a practical example. Srila Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction, text 4, he says, because that verse says whom we should take shelter, same concept. And he says, the Uttamadhikari, top notch. What is his description of the Uttamadhikari? Srila Prabhupada's description. He followed the four regulative principles. That means he's not a Maya. Let's understand. When you say, oh, beyond the crutches of Maya, means you're following the four regulative principles. And you don't waste time. Then you are not a Maya. We think that beyond the clutches is something beyond the beyond. You follow the four regulative principles, you don't waste time, you are not in the clutches of Maya. It's a fact. I say it openly. You follow the four regulative principles, you chant your rounds, you serve, you don't waste time, you are beyond the clutches of Maya. Maya is not practically affecting you. Now, I finish that. So, Srila Prabhupada says, Uttamadhikari follows the regulative principles, chants 16 rounds, and is always engaged in spreading Krishna consciousness. Then, Madhyamadhikari, Kanishta Adhikari. And Srila Prabhupada says, even a Kanishta Adhikari can accept disciples. I mean, we all know that. Doesn't mean that Kanishta Adhikari means he may not be maybe so advanced, but if he's doing his, if he's a good disciple, why cannot accept disciples? So this is very practical. But sometimes we have a very imaginary idea what does it mean beyond the clutches of Maya. And then we become kind of discouraged because, oh, if beyond the clutches of Maya means that, I can never go beyond the clutches of Maya. Because I have, you know, stomachache, this is hot, I'm tired. That doesn't mean that. Is it more clear? You don't agree. You are under the clutches of Maya. That's why you ask these questions. I'm joking. It was a joke. Look, you are technically, you're right. If you do all Nama Parada constantly, then of course that's not pure devotion. But you, if you put the effort to chant good 16 rounds, why should not be pure devotion? You are a pure devotee in the state of sadhana. What's the problem? If you do the effort. Now, you may be humble and say, oh, my rounds are terrible. I think all sorts of things. But I don't think it's true. I think, I don't know you. I never met you before. But I think that you, do you chant 16 rounds? Okay. I think you put some effort in chanting good rounds. Now, the fact that sometimes the mind may go here and there doesn't make it that these rounds are useless. Sometimes devotees have this idea, really. Sometimes the devotees, not only you, but sometimes devotees have an idea. Either it's a self-defeating tendency, or it's some tinge of tamaguna, and sometimes the devotees think, you know, or sometimes it's a little bit of imitation of great devotees who really feel super humble, super fallen. And sometimes devotees think they're fallen even when they're not fallen. Sometimes devotees think they're not qualified, for instance, to become gurus even when they are qualified. That's I see it all the time. And this is not very good for the movement because, first of all, it's based on a misconception. It's not based on the real philosophy. And second, there is a lot of psychological reaction to that. We don't think ourselves, we don't respect ourselves, we don't respect others. We just think, oh, only those who are very special can do that. And then we create a mythology. Oh, he's a guru, so he must be the Krishna Prema, beyond everything, this and that. And then when he has a problem, we lose our faith. How does it happen? The philosophy is a great guy, but now he's not great anymore. How does it work? We become confused. become confused. He's a pure devotee until he follows strictly the vows of initiation and the instruction of the spiritual master. Everybody can be a pure devotee. We are here to practice pure devotion. That's the point. Actually, this is the crucial point. Devotees think that pure devotion is something you have to achieve, but pure devotion is something you have to practice. It's different. It's a different concept. It really deals with the core idea of your life. What are you trying to achieve? Some of us think we are trying to achieve pure devotion, but pure devotion is something you practice. We all of us have all tools to practice pure devotion. Krishna prema, you cannot just practice Krishna prema. But pure devotion, we all have the tools to practice Uttama Bhakti. All of us. If you are here, you have the tools to practice Uttama Bhakti. Then, if we practice or not, that's a different issue. But the goal is not pure devotion. The pure devotion is the means. That's what I'm trying to stress. And that's why Srila Prabhupada says, all my disciples are pure devotees. In other words, all those who are my disciples, they follow the discipline which I've given them, they are pure devotees. Today's verse. Actually, the verse in itself doesn't speak about that. I can read it. O Lord, you perform many wonderful activities. Our only aim was to acquire a son by performing this great sacrifice. Therefore, our intelligence is not very sharp. We are not experienced in ascertaining life goals. By inviting you to this negligible sacrifice for some material motive, we have certainly committed a great offense at your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, please excuse our offenses because of your causeless mercy and equal mind. Oh, that's true. Sorry, I read the wrong words. Okay, let me read it again. Dear Lord, unless one worships the lotus feet of great devotees. Yes. So let's see the word. Mahat Charana. The lotus feet of Mahat.
What is the effect
of worshipping the lotus feet of great devotees? Is that what is free from the influence of Maya? But who among us does not have access to worshipping the feet of great devotees? Who? You don't have access? That's the most important thing. That's the most important thing. That's why I said, and I repeat, that we all have tools for pure devotions. Now we can use it, we cannot use it. It's like the Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada gave the Bhagavatam. Not all of us studied the Bhagavatam. So if we are neglectful of those tools, of course we don't get the benefit. But the tools are available. Nobody can say, I don't have the instruments to practice pure devotional service. Nobody can say. Prabhuji wanted to say something since a long time.
No, I just was going to ask the question or make the point that you... For example, there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam where it's discussing the glories of Prahlad Maharaj. And it said that Prahlad Maharaj was so absorbed in Krishna, he didn't know whether he was sitting or whether he was standing. So, and then, of course, now we're reading the story of Rishabhdev. At the end of this pastime, Rishabhdev is going to exhibit a type of aloof that is how do you say, extraordinary to the extreme.
Uh-huh.
So it seems to me there is some step of devotion that is obtainable where one is completely beyond the body and fully completely beyond the body. So that's the, what I'm trying to say is that it's possible. That's all.
Yes, but do you agree that it's not that because one is not at the level, it cannot be a pure devotee? Do you agree on that?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
But I agree that there is some...
Yeah, there is a state which is extraordinarily advanced and detached, yeah. But my point is that should not be the standard to judge if it's a pure devotee or not. That's what I'm saying. I guess, I mean, we are already in the beyond. So, yes.
This is coming back to my mind, memory, about the definition of uttam adhikari.
Okay.
One very good symptom we can judge ourselves is that uttam adhikari, like, how to say, has intense dislike for fault-finding. So this is very good symptom because we can each one of us, I don't know about you, but I know personally I am expert fault finding.
I'm also not very bad at that. Look, I don't know how much we have to discuss this, but I mean how much time it seems until you stay. I guess I need to stay. See, there are different definitions of uttama, madhyama, and kanishta. Okay. And that's another source of great confusion in our movement. Because sometimes the uttama is described as somebody at a very, very elevated stage of devotional service. Like Prabhu said, like 11th canto, it says that the uttama adhikari is not even conscious if it's day or night, is even not conscious if he's dressed or if he's naked. But that's one particular definition. Some other particular other definition, like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you have what's his name? Tapana Mishra, who is the father of Tapana Mishra and Chandrasekhar in Varanasi, and these are associates of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya will dine in his house. Tapana Mishra is that devotee who, when he was in Bangladesh, Lord Chaitanya talked that verse that my holy name will be heard in every town and village. He talks to Tapana Mishra. And he's the father of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. So, Lord Chaitanya will stay in his house and so on. But because these two devotees could not philosophically counteract the Mayavadi's preaching, Srila Prabhupada says there are Kanishta Adhikaris. And these are associates of Lord Chaitanya. So when we talk about Uttama, Madhyam, we have to understand the context. We have to understand the context, otherwise we become very confused. And it's confusing. Therefore, when you see Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Instruction talking for ISKCON devotees, whom you take shelter, he says, Uttamadhikari, 16 rounds, 4 regulative principles, and he's always absorbed in the mission. And that's first class. You cannot say it's not first class. Any man or woman that does that, it's a first class. It's a first class devotee. If he consistently does, year after year, you can say this person is a uttama adhikari. And you can take shelter. So, there is another description in Nectar of Devotion of uttama, madhyam, and kanishta. At the beginning, those are not even description of devotees, those are candidates for sadhana bhakti. You know where in the Nectar of Devotion it says the Uttama is very much familiar, proficient in the scriptures, and has strong faith. The Madhyam is not so proficient in the scriptures, but has strong faith. The Kanishta, he doesn't know much about the scripture, and his faith is not so strong. But those are even, they're just candidates for sadhana bhakti. That's entry level. So, my suggestion, you can take it or leave it, is that there are different types of Uttama, Madhyam, and Kanishta in different books, in different contexts, describing different things. For us, on the practical level, the most important, the most observable, is what Srila Prabhupada talks in the Nectar of Instruction. And you can see, I mean, you can be convinced that if a devotee consistently chants his rounds, follows the principle, his whole life is dedicated to the mission in some service or another, could be deity worship, could be book distribution, but completely dedicated to the mission, he's an Uttamadhikari, he's first class. Otherwise, what he has to do? And that's also another social problem we have. Because we tend, due to this confusion and due to the problems in the past, we tend to minimize our own ISKCON people. And therefore, we become vulnerable to other people who preach. They are not shy at all to say, you see, we have the pure devotee, we have the Paramahamsa, we have the Sadguru. Without mentioning any name, but they come with this big advertisement. You see, he's the Sadguru. Sadguru only means real guru, doesn't mean anything else. It's like, he's the Sadguru, your gurus are, you know, Asadgurus. So they come, see, here is the Sadguru, this Swami, come. And then our neophyte devotees, they become bewildered. Oh, he's the Sadguru. What are all these ISKCON gurus? They're not Sadgurus? So they jump ship. So we are, when this is another, this is like a footnote, by minimizing our devotees, we are shooting ourselves in the foot, even as a preaching mission. Because we minimize, now he's like, oh, you know, he's like, oh, he's not, and then somebody else comes, you see, the great, and maybe they're not so great after all. It's just normal, you know, okay, good devotees, but maybe they're not so great. We are subjected as a society to the swinging of the pendulum, no? The first 11 gurus, some of them we advertise, oh, they're really super special. And then they were not super special. They were super special because we were very dear to Srila Prabhupada. They were doing enormous service, but they were not super special. And now we go to the next, oh, nobody's special. Nobody's a pure devotee. We have to be a little bit, no, balanced. We have to be a little balanced. We have many pure devotees in ISKCON. Devotees who have no other desire than to serve the Lord. Now, there will be some interference sometimes, some, like you said, maybe some criticism of others in the mind. So what? Doesn't make them less pure devotees if they do not cultivate. That's all the message, my message this morning. We have some very mythological ideas, and we get confused, and we lose touch with reality. And so we perceive everybody as, you know, unqualified, when there are a lot of people who are very qualified. And you are all pure devotees. Because if Krishna comes in front of you right now, you're not going to ask for elevation to heavenly planets, I hope. You're not going to ask for money, women, or men, or other things. you're going to ask for Krishna Prema, or no, let me be eternally at your service. That's what you're going to ask. So therefore you are pure devotees. And the last analogy I give, which I also heard interesting, a mango is a mango. Maybe a ripe mango, maybe a green mango, but still is a mango. You can't say, well, it's an apple, or it's a cucumber. No, it's a mango. So those, the serious devotees, are following Uttama Bhakti. They're practicing Uttama Bhakti. Maybe at the level of sadhana, but still it's pure devotion. And still they're pure devotees. So with this, I salute you. Wish you all the best. Grantara Srimabhatan Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All the pure devotees of ISKCON were many. Ki Jai.